We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What is up, the Bronx Pinstripe Show? We've got a big episode with you because of all the Yankees news, Starlin Castro trade and some other trades. We're going to be recording with a Cubs podcast, Ivy Envy, who you guys have heard in the past. We talked with them just as the baseball playoffs were starting, but we'll recording with them later in the evening, and that'll be the second half of this episode. But Scott, what's up, man? It's been busy.
Yeah, it has been busy. It was a busy week. We had a lot of, I think, good news. I think Brian Cashman has done some good work. He definitely had a couple of things that were head scratchers, but I don't believe that he is complete and completed his trading, and all the moves that are going to be continuing, I think, after the deadline are going to make everything just make a little bit more sense. I think Cashman does have a plan, and you know, it's very obvious what he's doing, and it's getting younger. So I'm excited for what he's doing. I think he's done a great job so far.
Are you sad?
Am I sad? No, I'm not sad. Well, why would I be sad?
Ref Snyder!
Oh, that's true. That's true. You know, I tell you what. I think the whole, like a lot of the premise behind Ref Snyder was, one, anti-Steven Drew. And two, it's a young guy who gets to be in the lineup on a daily basis, play with Didi, and build our infield. And while it's not Rob Ref Snyder, and that does sadden me a bit, the fact that Starlin Castro is a three-time All-Star, 25 years old, and now he's our second baseman for the long-term future. I mean, he's controlled till I think, what, 2019, something like that. That's exciting. So it's a very similar situation, and this is a proven commodity. I think Starlin Castro is probably Rob Ref Snyder's ceiling. You know, I think this is a great deal.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely agree with you. I know we've been calling for Ref Snyder to play for over or a year at this point, but that was because he was the best option and the most exciting option they had up until now. Obviously, Castro is better than Ref Snyder is at this point, and it doesn't mean that Ref Snyder's career with the Yankees is done. We can talk about that more, but I would overall agree with you that I like the move that Cashman, and like you said, trying to get younger, right? That's the
trend. That is the name of the game right now. Young guys can play baseball better than old guys.
The Yankees are old in a lot of positions. They're also young in a couple positions. But positions like shortstop and second base and catcher, middle of the diamond players, need to be young. They need to be athletic. You can stick an old guy at first base and get away with it, but can't stick an old guy up the middle because you're going to get burned that way.
Yeah. So that's exactly what he did. So I'm excited to talk more about it and get into all the happenings in the winter meetings. But other than that, had a pretty busy weekend with just all sorts of stuff. I'm doing like a million things to my house. We're doing a whole first floor renovation. We have a new fence going up. It's like all sorts of homeowner stuff that's just exciting for me. New appliances. Oh baby, new appliances. So there's lots of cool stuff going on there. And then my Jets won today. They didn't win. They dominated. It was just another back-to-back terrific performances. Tennessee.
Yeah, that's what
two terrific performances back-to-back. The defense has really, really stepped up. I mean, they're just playing good football right now.
It is the Titans.
That's fine, but the thing is that they're putting complete games together, and that's the beautiful part about it. And honestly, Ryan Fitzpatrick has hit another level. This dude has been unbelievable. That's what, three touchdowns last week, three touchdowns this week. You cannot ask. This is the best quarterback play the Jets have had since maybe Brett Favre, you know, for half the season.
They've got to re-sign him, right?
Oh, no doubt. No, there's no doubt about it. He's going to be the guy, and they'll see if they can develop, you know, the kid from Texas, Baylor, and you know, to be the quarterback in the future if that's the case. But I mean, it's not like Fitzpatrick's an old dude. I mean, he's still relatively younger for quarterback standards, and you know, he does well in the system. He's proven that. So now he's got
turned
weapons.
I mean, yeah, Marshall and Decker, 2,000-yard receivers. That's something the Jets haven't had in my lifetime, at least.
Yeah, well, and this, you know, over the past 2 weeks, you've seen the running game turn into Chris Ivory running for 100 yards, and then also Bilal Powell now has a role as a pass-catching running back out of the backfield, and he's been phenomenal at it. Touchdowns in the last two games, really hitting his stride. So the whole team is really starting to click, and I'm excited about it.
With Casey kind of surging, though, you guys need to get to 10 wins probably.
No, that's not relatively true. If you look at the wild card now, we are tied with Pittsburgh, but we're at 8-5. Everybody else is 6-7. So we're tied with KC. We're both in right now with a wild card. So Pittsburgh's the other team, and I can't remember what the tiebreaker is there. So we do have to keep winning, though.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. The Patriots got a game tonight. We're recording this Sunday instead of our normal Monday so we can get that stuff in with Ivy Envy. But yeah, Patriots are playing tonight. I think Gronk is back, which is huge. We'll see. I just want him to get healthy for the playoffs because that's the key for them right now. I would obviously love to get the number one seed, but if they're not healthy, they're not going anywhere. So that's first priority.
That's true. I'm going against Tom Brady in my fantasy playoffs tonight, too. I have a pretty decent lead right now, but I would really appreciate it if he would just stop at 3 touchdowns if at all possible.
I mean, the Houston defense is no joke.
No, and there's a lot of ex-Patriots on that coaching staff, too. So you'd think that they would have some idea of what's going to be going
on. And Will Fork. Will Fork is playing. I mean, I don't think he's a big part of their team, but he can at least give them some insight.
He can help scheme, yeah. I mean, Romeo Crennel is their defensive coordinator, right? He's a Belichick guy.
And O'Brien. So, O'Brien's head
and
coach.
And then O'Brien's, so there's a lot of New England blood down in Houston on that team. So O'Brien, maybe it'll be a relatively close game.
O'Brien was the offensive coordinator for the Patriots for a while, so he'll certainly be able to coach up that defense, give them pointers on how to stop Brady and stuff.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Brady can lose 3 in a row. It'd be amazing.
I don't think that's happened.
No, I don't think it has.
Which, so, I mean, from all
there's a first for everything.
For all the crazy things, stats about Brady, I mean, that is one of the most crazy ones, that he's never lost 3 games in a row.
Until tonight. Until everybody's listening to this and the Patriots have lost.
I can't stand these Sunday and Monday night games, though. I feel like an old man. I'm just, by 10:30 at night and it's halftime, I'm just like, God damn, I want to go to bed. Just, why can't you put them on at 4 o'clock?
I know. Next week starts the Saturday games, too. So
which is a little better, I guess, because I don't have to wake up for work the next day.
Yeah, I like Saturday games. The Jets play – who do they play? They play on Saturday night.
Cowboys.
They're playing the Cowboys on Saturday night, so that'll be fun.
I got a big day next Saturday.
Yeah? What's that?
Well, I'm going to see Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
Are you a Star Wars guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like a Star Wars guy. Like, I know everything about it, but I've seen the movies 100 times.
Yeah.
I made my wife just watch the trilogy, so she got exposed to it. I'm a fan.
I mean, the first 3 movies I love. It's probably one of my favorite – trilogies of all time. It's classic.
The first 3 made. Is that
the
what
first
mean?
3 made, yeah. Not
yeah,
the,
I'm not,
the
into the later ones, to tell you the truth.
I mean, no, they sucked.
Yeah.
The new 3 movies are a joke, and it kind of sucks that they were added onto the originals. But I think the new ones are going to be pretty good. At least the trailers look awesome.
They do, and they have a lot of the same characters, even the same actors.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison Ford is in it, Carrie Fisher's in it, and I know Mark Hamill makes an appearance. I don't know how big of an appearance.
Okay.
So it's the original cast. Nice. Not the original cast.
Is it released on Saturday?
Midnight at Thursday or whatever. I'm not going to go wait in line and get the first showing. But
You're not going to be in costume?
No, I will not be in my Darth Vader costume.
You won't be on stilts in a Chewbacca costume?
The thing I think I love the most about the Star Wars movies was just having the toys as a kid, though. Because, you know, having the Millennium Falcon and all that stuff when I was 8 and 9 years old. That was probably the peak for me.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I still have like a box of like little figurines.
Oh, I got
Star
have
Wars
somewhere.
Figurines in my class. I actually just found them. I just ran into them looking for something else. And I'm a fan of them. I'm excited. We're going the day after Christmas. My family, my brother-in-law got tickets to IMAX in the IMAX 3D version of it in Jersey.
Nice.
So we're all going to go and do that the day after Christmas. So
I don't trust myself to not find spoilers if I wait a whole week, though.
Yeah, I won't. I don't care that much. I'm excited for – the reason I had to get Bevan on board with all this stuff so she could understand what was going on.
You know, so she'd never seen him. She had never seen him.
She had never seen it. No.
See, that's weird to me.
I'm checking boxes here. We did all the Star Wars. A couple nights ago, we watched Christmas Vacation because she had never seen it. I was like, what is wrong with you? Spaceballs, never had seen it. We watched that.
I can understand that a little bit more.
What? Spaceballs
I like Spaceballs.
Classic.
I like Spaceballs, but if it's, what is it, on TV? Maybe once a year, and you're not going to throw that on if you don't know what it is.
Spaceballs, anytime it's on, I can't move the channel.
Oh, it's one of my all-time favorite spoof movies, but...
Yeah.
To not ever see this... That's why whenever I come across somebody who's never seen the Star Wars movie, it's just really a question of how.
Right, and her brother owns the box set. explain that. He's a big fan too.
Those are movies that that as parents you should show your kids. It's like a responsibility you have as a parent, I think. There's a few movies like that, and I think Star Wars is one of them. At least I will be showing... There's two things, at least I know, I will be showing my kids. That's Yankees games and the original Star Wars movies.
Very cool.
I want to get something off my chest, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I am so sick, because with all the hot stove stuff going on, it's really important to follow all the beat writers, you know, Buster Olney, Ken Rosenthal, all the baseball guys on Twitter to get the latest news. And I'm just so sick of all the Twitter trolls. Retweeting old tweets, making up fake accounts. Get a freaking life, dude. I cannot tell you how many times I get things retweeted onto my timeline about fake reports of guys signing or fake things about guys. You know, there was one recently, I think somebody retweeted an old tweet from John Heyman that Marcus Stroman failed a drug test, and I think it was from 2013. It's just annoying. Do you not find that annoying?
Yeah, so when I'm on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter under my personal account that often. I just don't find the time to do it. So I'm on Bronx Pinstripes more than anything. And because there are so many people on there, I actually don't even go into the timeline. I'm usually in like lists and and then just interacting with people. So I don't see a lot of that stuff.
Well, I rely on Twitter to get news, especially for stuff like the hot stove or the trade deadline or anything like that.
Yeah.
And Twitter trolls ruin it.
No, I get it. I've seen a lot of them. I see them on Instagram a lot too, and it just gets annoying, you know. But I think the way I filter through it is I have a list of the guys that I trust, and I'll pay attention to a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I should really get around to doing that.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier. It cuts through the noise.
You know, it's like 16-year-old kids too, just messing around.
Yeah, it is what it is. They're bored and doing things probably that we would have done when we were 16 years old too. So.
Except we didn't have the internet then.
They have Twitter and we didn't, yeah.
Growing up with the internet must be weird.
I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I wasn't in college with phones and Facebook and all that. I thank God there were no cameras on phones when I was in college.
Yeah, my generation's like the last one. The last generation to know what it was like to be a kid without the internet and cell phones and all that stuff.
Yeah, my first cell phone, I think, was when I was my last year in college. Now it was just when it was a flip phone.
Yeah, just playing Snake and stuff?
Just playing Snake. Just doing all sorts of stuff.
Killing time in class?
Killing time.
All right, let's get into some of the happenings over the last week with the Yankees. We will talk about, obviously, in length with the Cashar trade, but first I want to touch on the Justin Wilson trade, which was pretty surprising, actually. So the Yankees traded Wilson to the Tigers for two minor league pitchers, Luis Kessa and Chad Green. I'm not even going to pretend to know who these guys were before 4 days ago, but they're essentially mid-level AAA pitchers who can provide the Yankees, you know, starting pitching depth where if they need to call a guy up for a long man or to have a spot start or something like that. To trade a guy like Justin Wilson for that was pretty surprising because I feel like Justin Wilson had a pretty big impact on the team last year.
So I thought it was also surprising when I saw who the deal was for and what we gave up. I thought the value was – I didn't know enough about these guys. The one interesting footnote about one of the guys, the Luis Sessa kid, is one of the main pieces that was traded from the Mets to the Tigers in the Cespedes trade.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's an interesting piece of it. So obviously people, you know, he's a guy that people are looking at and was coveted to a certain point. But, you know, listening to what Brian Cashman says about these moves, and it goes along with the theme that we've seen and what he's been talking about and getting younger, this was an organizational depth move. This was a depth move to get stronger in the starting pitching on the AAA, the AA, in the minors, just to have more depth and young guys who they believe that they can develop. But from what Cashman was saying, they have a lot of faith in these two guys that they're going to be taking another step in the right direction and be positive commitments to the organization in the near future. So
couldn't they have done that without trading Justin Wilson though?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's available. And the other, if you look at it, Justin Wilson was extremely effective. He started losing velocity towards the end of the season, but who the hell didn't in our
bullpen, our bullpen set the record for most innings pitched.
Yeah, so everybody started fading a little bit. So I really can't use that against him. But, you know, obviously they have faith in the guys that are there now. I mean, this move would not be made if that wasn't the case. So, you know, they have faith in the guys. You know, we've talked about the guys that came up at the end of the year, the unnamed AAA bullpen, basically, that was just, you know, there was a running bus that was going back and forth to Scranton.
Yeah, they were all putrid.
Right, but these guys were also getting a lot of experience at the end. You know, these guys were probably not ready for what they were, but they were thrown into the fire, and they got a lot of big league experience, and that goes a long way, I think. So, you know, obviously Rothschild and Cashman and Girardi saw enough out of some of these guys, and, you know, on the AAA level as well, they're getting good information about these guys and positive feedback from a lot of the guys who are there. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens, but there's definitely faith in some of these guys. You know, that's my understanding from the front office.
Especially in September, Wilson was the go-to guy out of the bullpen before Betances and Miller, because Shreve pitched himself out of that.
Right.
I guess Warren was there too, but I just disagreed with how they used Warren down the stretch. Wilson was trusted by Girardi, and he pitched really well, actually. And now if you're looking at it, that's a lefty out of the bullpen. Guys that they could have fill in for that next year, obviously Chase and Shreve, who we hope does not choke in the second half next year. Hope he can be more like the first half Shreve than the second half Shreve. James Pazos, who pitched a couple times down the stretch for the Yankees. I didn't really see much out of him. That'll get me excited. And obviously Jacob Lindgren, who we forgot about because he got injured, I think, in May.
Well, and I think Lindgren's a big piece because Lindgren was, you know, before he got injured, was a guy that they were really going to be relying on, and was very highly touted coming out of the minor leagues, and was a guy that was going to be a big part of the bullpen for a long time with this team. So I see him stepping into that level. Obviously, he's coming off of an injury, so we don't know how. I mean, you never know how someone's going to respond.
And he only has a handful of major league innings. He's not experienced at the major league level. Essentially, next year will be his rookie year for the Yankees if he's on the 25-man roster.
That's true. And, you know, Pazos, they obviously like him. They've seen enough of him that they like. So you're going to see these guys battling to fill a lot of these spots. At the same time, I would not be surprised if Cashman's making some more moves to strengthen either the starting rotation, the back end of the rotation, or, you know, the middle relief roles. I mean, we see a guy like you know, taking Warren's spot. We'll talk about this trade more, but like a Brian Mitchell is a guy that I think they think can take the next step, you know, coming back, you know, into 2016. So I think he's a guy that we're going to see, you know, kind of slot into a bigger role and possibly into that Warren role. So
yeah, if I were Cashman, I would be looking all over the place for a seventh inning guy, essentially. Assuming you keep Miller and Betances, which I would now be shocked if they traded Miller. Especially
with
the loss of Wilson.
King's ransom. Yeah, it would have to be a King's ransom.
Because if you were to trade Miller now, I mean, you're really depleting your bullpen. You basically only have Betances and a bunch of question marks.
Right.
But what I was saying is, you've got Miller, you got Betances, then you have a bunch of guys, and you don't know what they are. You just figure law of averages, 25 to 30% of them will work out, right? So just collect a bunch of them. So if I were Cashman, I would just get a bunch of guys and see what works, play around with it in the beginning of the year. I don't want to have to be playing around with it in August and September like they were doing last year.
Well, and we've seen many, many, many times in Major League Baseball where relief guys come out of absolutely nowhere and have great seasons. I mean, Justin Wilson is probably one of those guys coming with Pittsburgh when he came up. I mean, he kind of came out of nowhere and did what he did and had success. Guys find success in certain roles later in their career, you know, transition starters. There's just guys who could pop up out of the woodwork and be effective for you in a bullpen. So, you know, while I don't think it kills our bullpen by any means, it was definitely a strange move. But if you're looking at what he was trying to do and what he's been trying to do, and that's get younger and provide more organizational depth. I also talked to some of the guys at Pinstripe Prospects. They're also, you know, kind of getting this as an organizational depth move because the depth in the starting pitching was probably one of the weaker spots of the Yankees farm system. So this is an organizational depth move that helps in the future and helps them, you know, bring guys along maybe faster and can help, you know, a little bit sooner.
I get it. I get that part of it. I'm just thinking maybe they traded a piece that was too important to them off the major league roster for next season to add guys that, I mean, again, are just depth guys. I just think that you can get depth guys in other ways, but obviously.
Well, they're young depth guys that are being developed, and obviously they saw something that these guys could very possibly take that next step. So, you know, by calling it just depth for the bullpen or for the minor leagues, I would be just careful with the way we're saying that, because I think they have more potential is what they're seeing, right? So it's not just like, hey, this guy's a depth guy and that's what he's going to be. He's going to be in the middle relief guy, and that's his max, that's his ceiling. I don't think that's what they see. I actually think they see more potential in these guys.
I mean, clearly, why else would they have done the trade? So, all right, some other baseball news, I guess, around the league, and we'll get this more from Corey when we have him on, but the Cubs made two huge signings with Zobrist and Hayward. And it was interesting with that Hayward, which I think I tagged you in a tweet, how he's got two opt-out clauses in his 7-year or 8-year contract. And you kind of alluded to this on our last podcast about the trend of contracts, right? And how teams are going to start giving them more opt-out clauses because these 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year deals are just absolutely ridiculous. Who knows what a guy is going to be after that length of time. So the opt-out is kind of the new trend.
Right. I just think they're going to be, you know, what we talked about last time, and I think, you know, we're going to start seeing more of this type of thing, and just front office being more creative with these contracts. You know, when we saw – one of the contracts we were talking about that kind of brought all this up was the Stanton contract. How long was that contract?
12.
I forget. Okay, 12 years. But in essence, it's like a 5 or 6 year contract because of the opt-out clause.
Yeah, he had an opt-out clause somewhere in the middle of it. I don't remember exactly when.
So that's what we're seeing. Now, can it burn the team? No doubt, because these are player opt-outs. So it's basically the players taking advantage of the front end of the money and then turning it into another contract. That's right. What they're trying to do. That's the point of it.
If the player sucks, he's not going to opt out.
Exactly. So that's when it can hurt the team itself. But, you know, I think is going to continue to happen. I think we're going to see more, you know, like signing bonuses. I think we're going to see more deferred money. We're going to see more opt-out clauses. I just think they're going to be more creative with these contracts to lock in guys and make them more attractive in different ways.
I mean, those were two big fish off the free agent market. There's kind of now dwindling down as the winter meetings go. I think Cueto is really the biggest guy still out there. I guess Cueto and Cespedes.
Justin Upton. I mean, we haven't heard anything about Upton, which I'm very surprised about.
Forgot about him.
Yeah,
we literally haven't heard... literally forgot about him.
Because we haven't heard anything about him. I mean, if you're following these beat writers, and not the fake ones, the real ones, you're not hearing anything about Justin Upton, which to me was kind of surprising because, you know, I think he's a great bat. I think he's a great asset to a team. Everywhere he's gone, he's done well. He's a power right-handed guy with speed. He's kind of a five-tool guy. He's going to be expensive, but is he going to be more than Cespedes? Probably not. So I'm very curious to you know, just hearing that the Orioles are giving the amount of money that they've offered to Chris Davis is so surprising to me.
Biggest contract in team history.
I just don't believe he's worth it. I really don't.
Of course he's not worth
it. I mean, if you think about the year before that when he didn't have his Adderall, the dude was hitting like $1.50. I mean, it was something – it was below the Mendoza line, I'm pretty sure.
Listen, the guy can mash. He can absolutely hit the ball a mile.
Right, but he's Adam Dunn.
That swing is not suited long term. He's gonna not be good when he's getting older. He's gonna be swinging through a lot of balls. I would not touch that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. Brady Anderson wants that contract so badly. He wants to be here now so the Orioles can give him the biggest deal.
What a joke Brady Anderson was.
But, you know, I don't know. If I'm looking at those numbers, I feel like the numbers that the Orioles were trying to offer Chris Davis is definitely enough to get a Justin Upton. And to me, a Justin Upton would be a hell of a lot better of a player on my team than Chris Davis. So I don't really get that. But yeah, it's been very quiet. And you're right. Two of these big guys, like Hayward, I think is overvalued. Zobrist, he's got a great value just because he's a winner. You can't really, you know, put a monetary value on winning. And the fact that he's going to bring a lot of you know, veteran leadership to that young team, I think is going to be extremely valuable too. Plus, he's back with the crazy professor. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Zobrist is great for them. And so is Hayward, because what were two things that we saw was a glaring weakness, or what is one thing we saw with the Cubs that was a glaring weakness against the Mets? They couldn't make contact, and both of those guys are contact hitters.
And defense. I mean, don't forget, Hayward, they're both plus defenders,
that's
and
true.
That's going to help them out as well, because when they put Schwarber in left field, I mean, he looked lost.
Running around with his head cut off out there.
Yeah. So that's definitely going to help them out.
Did you see that baseball sent out new parameters or new recommendations for parameters for safety? Did you see that this week?
I didn't see that this week. I remember it being talked about during the course of the season that this was going to happen. So what was the actual,
They're now recommending all stadiums to put netting within 70 feet of home plate, which would extend it past the dugouts.
Interesting. How high?
I would assume like covering.
Wow.
So, I mean, if you're sitting essentially in the infield, you're going to be behind nets. I mean, this is just recommendation. It's not mandatory.
Yeah, I wonder if this is kind of a Major League Baseball CYA type thing to say, hey,
well,
we're recommending
been,
you
there's
do
definitely
this if you
been
don't.
Some issues, especially at like some of the older stadiums like Fenway, where the stands are 2 feet from the field.
Yeah, I remember that one girl got hit like square between the eyes.
You know what my recommendation is?
It's crazy. Pay attention to the game.
Yeah. People are more concerned
phone.
With Instagramming pictures of themselves eating a hot dog than they are watching the actual game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really hard to – I mean, I understand player safety is obviously on the forefront for all major league owners. At the same time, you know, if you're paying for those seats, you know, you're paying good money to be in those seats, and I don't know if you want that net there, to tell you the truth. I mean, I feel like you're there for a reason. You know, if you're worried about it, pay attention, move.
I certainly don't want the nets there. If I'm sitting behind the dugout, or obviously you need it behind home plate, that's stupid. But if you're sitting behind the dugout, I don't want the net there.
Yeah, I wouldn't as a fan personally. So I agree with that.
You also
lose
some of the interaction with the players running off the field, throwing balls at them, and all that kind of stuff.
There's just so many fluke things that happen. I mean, it's amazing how this stuff doesn't happen more often and there's more serious injuries.
Yeah.
It's just now in this day and age with all the amount of media that's out there, when something does happen, it just gets put on the forefront even more, and that's why these rules come about.
So. Baseball is 100 years old. I mean,
right.
It wasn't a problem.
And we're sitting further away now than we used to be.
Yeah, it wasn't a problem 20 years ago. Was it? It wasn't an epidemic, I guess, like they're treating it as now.
Well, there wasn't social media to create an epidemic and make epidemic.
The internet is ruining our society, Scott.
It is. Ruining our society. Too many things
going on. I think Fenway announced that they're going to do the 70 feet thing.
Okay.
So I know that. I don't think the Yankees have said anything.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how many teams actually do it.
What do the Yankees fans call those seats right behind the dugout and everything with the moat protecting them? What was the nickname they had for those seats?
The nickname for the seats?
Yeah, didn't they call them something when the stadium first opened? Because you know how they have like essentially a separate walkway separating those really good box seats.
You're talking about the legend seats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there was something else. Whatever. I can tweet it out later. I'll find it. It was sort of like a funny thing they were calling them. Anyway, before we get Corey on with us to talk about the Castro trade, and we'll really get his perspective on what type of player Starlin Castro is, let's talk about what this means for some of the other players on the Yankees. Mentioned it at the start of the episode. Your boy Ref Snyder is now not the second baseman. Definitely not. Castro is the second baseman next year, no questions asked. So, the question is, what do the Yankees do with Ref Snyder, and what do they do with Ackley?
So, Ackley has a role, even with Castro there. I think Ackley was more – the reason they were talking about platooning Ackley and Ref Snyder is because they didn't fully trust Ref Snyder. So, now that they have a second baseman that they do fully trust, that they're obviously invested in, they have more of a clear role for Ackley now, and that's going to be a super utility guy, and I think that fits him beautifully. I think it's a great position for him. I think he's actually probably one of the better players for that spot. I mean, this is what I thought Stephen Drew could have been last year. I mean, we would have put up with his production as a super utility guy, not as a starting everyday player. So what does this mean for Ref Snyder? Well, right now, Ref Snyder's the starting second baseman for Scranton Wilkes-Barre.
Yep.
That's what he is. And he's organizational depth, but is he a player that is just going to be sitting down there for no reason? Because I don't know when he's going to ever play, unless there's an injury. You know, there's no hope for him. I mean, he's pretty much blocked unless he changes positions. And I know he was an outfielder in college, and You know, I don't see them putting him anywhere else in the infield. They don't even have faith in him at second. So the outfield is very crowded.
Position for prospects anywhere else. I mean, Headley's there for 3 more years. Obviously, you got Didi and Castro. So he's
going to get packaged and get traded. That's to me his value of the team right now.
Best case scenario for the Yankees and Ref Snyder actually is for him to rake in spring training and then they trade him.
That would be a terrific one if he's on the team at that point. I'm still very hesitant. I don't think he's going to be on the team. I think Cashman is going to be.
You mean they're
going to
trade him before then?
Yes.
He has no value right now.
Well, no, that's not true because he came up at the end of the year and proved to be a commodity. I think he handled himself extremely well in the major leagues that last month. I think he did very well. So I do think he has value. Well, he doesn't have value because the Yankees he's devalued because of the Yankee situation, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand that. But as a player, he still has value.
If you're another team, you're saying, well, we know you're not going to play him. He's either going to be playing for your AAA team or you can trade him to us for what we want.
But that's fine. So then they'll put him on the AAA roster then. But teams know that. I don't think that's going to be a big stumbling block. I think if somebody is in the need for a second baseman that can hit, I mean, that's a guy you can look at for sure, who has major league experience, who proves that he can hit on the major league level, and has upside. So I think he's extremely – I think he's a valuable and I think he's an attractive player.
I suppose.
We just don't have a spot for him anymore.
Hey, at least the Yankees got young there. I mean, that was the big thing, right? Castro's going to be 26 at the start of next year. Didi's going to be 26 as well. That's the youngest middle infield the Yankees have had since I've been alive.
I love it. Let's get these guys gelling together. I think it's going to be exciting watching them. And, you know, honestly, we're going to talk more about this trade, but I some people I've heard don't like the trade, which is crazy to me. Like, I couldn't believe it. Francesa is not a big fan of the trade, which I don't understand.
I didn't hear what he said. What was his reason?
He's not a big fan of the player. He's not a big fan of Castro. You know, he doesn't think it's that great of a pull. I see a young guy who now is moving to a different team, has all the incentive in the world to do well on a new team, has a major upside. I mean, the second half of last year, he batted, I think, what, 356 or 350 something at the second half last year when he made that move to second base. This dude can rake. He's young. He can steal bases. He can play defense. He's a three-time All-Star and he's 25 years old. How can you not be excited for that for an Adam Warren who the Yankees truly believe they have a couple guys that could slot right into that role? So
Warren,
I think,
was definitely
a great deal.
Projected to be in the rotation next year, or at least a big part of the team in some capacity next year. But that's a trade you make 10 out of 10 times. If you look at the rotation otherwise now, you got the guys we all know about. Tanaka, Pineda, Severino, Evaldi, Nova, and CeCe. That's 6 starters, 5 spots. They're going to need at least one more, I think. Maybe you get one of the guys from the Wilson trade. Maybe you have a Brian Mitchell or somebody like that. But if you're talking about trading a swingman, which is what Warren was, a very good swingman, but a swingman... Right. For a starting second baseman who's played almost 900 games in his career, and he's not even 26 years old, you do that every time. I don't get if people are not on board with this trade.
Yeah. I'm on the same page. I love the move. I think Brian Cashman he struck at the exact right time and made a great move. So
cool. All right. Well, it's about time we get Corey on here and find out more about Castro. So guys, stay tuned for that. Okay, we're back with IVMV. Corey, are you sad to hear Castro's walk-up music go? We just played that on the transition to this part of the podcast. Are you sad to see that go?
I am. I loved it. It was so awesome to go into Wrigley Field and hear. I mean, normally walk-up music is there in the background. Nobody really pays attention, but his walk-up music had everyone in the crowd clapping and just having fun. And it really kind of was like a symbol of what the 2015 season was for the Cubs. You know, I've talked about last time I was on your podcast, I talked about how much fun this season was. And it's just a really fun song. And it was really cool, too, because this was not 2015 was not. At least the first half was not a good season for Castro, and a lot of fans were kind of down on him. I'm sure he was down on himself, and so even throughout that, it almost kind of felt like it was as a fan, your way of like in the stadium, showing your support for him and encouraging him through this walk-up music that just had everybody dancing and clapping along. I really hope that he takes it to Yankee Stadium. And I also hope that someone on the 2016 Cubs decides to adopt it as their song.
So you mentioned about how Castro had a pretty bad first half of the year and really kind of resurrected his time with the Cubs because he was out of a job, right?
Yeah, so Addison Russell had been called up earlier in the season and had been playing some second base. And he is, you know, and at the time, it was obvious he's the shortstop of the future. And it was just a matter of how was Castro going to fit into everything. And Castro was just, you know, honestly just terrible at the plate in the first half of the season. Just looked out of sync and was really struggling. And so, yeah, he got benched and lost his job. They moved Addison Russell over there. And Joe Maddon was real clear when he got benched that this was not a temporary thing and that it was a benching. It wasn't days off. It was a benching. Castro really turned things around. I mean, all the reports of how much he was working with the coaching staff during that time to try to figure out what was wrong at the plate and get his swing back. And he did that. And then I think they kind of planned on using him in like a utility role at second base, but you couldn't really keep him out of the lineup in the last couple months of the season. I mean, he was incredible. He was the best hitter in baseball the second half or in the last 2 months of the season. And so it was really good to see his time with the Cubs end in that way, rather than there was a lot of pressure for the Cubs to move him at the trade deadline. You know, fans, I think that's what a lot of fans wanted to see him sent on his way. But it was, as I am a Castro supporter, I like him a lot. And so I was really happy to see him turn things around and end things on a positive note. Kind of, it was good for the Cubs because he kind of built some value in that second half of the season too. And I think you guys are going to like him a lot. He's very like polarizing. Fans either love him or hate him. There's not really much in between. So, and I think that'll probably carry over.
I have done some reading about how he can make some boneheaded plays sometimes, and it's sort of Starlin being Starlin, sort of like Manny being Manny with the Red Sox. But he is talented, and you got to respect a guy for getting benched and then coming back and not just moping around and pouting for the rest of the season, because the guy's only 25 years old. I mean, his career is still young. So for him to bounce back and work his way back onto the field says a lot about him as a player and as a person.
Right, yeah, because I think he really could have probably divided that clubhouse, and he didn't. I mean, every report that you read, all the stuff from Joe Maddon and any of the beat reporters and everything say that he knew that it was his role to be a good team leader, and this was his opportunity to do it. You know, kind of at a time of adversity, and I think it's really admirable. And yeah, especially for a player that young. I mean, and that's part of what I think a lot of Cubs fans enjoyed was that he literally was a kid when he got called up. He was 20 years old he was a kid, and we got to see him grow up I don't know if he's a grown up yet. He's working on it, I think, but we got to see him grow up and really change, you know, who he was as a player and make adjustments and do all those things. The Cubs called him up way too early. And I think part of the reason that he was called up was that Jim Hendry, who was our GM at the time, now he works for your Yankees. He was kind of fighting for his job, I think. And it was kind of a last ditch effort to bring a little bit of life to the team and show that there was something in the minors, which he was about all there was in the minors. And so he completely skipped AAA. He came up after, and I don't even, if I remember right, he wasn't in AA that long. Came up and really got called up too early. And it kind of, I think it was a disservice to him because he probably had a lot more growing to do in the minor leagues, but he made those adjustments on the fly and did it in the majors. And it seems like he's been around a long time. It seems like he's been part of the Cubs forever. And it's crazy to think that he's only 25.
Now, I know that the Yankees were actually looking at Castro at the trade deadline last year as well. I mean, you were talking about how a lot of Cubs fans were looking for them to turn Castro into another player at that point. But, you know, at that point, his value was probably at the lowest in his career. And the fact that he turned it around and the Yankees came back to talk to them, I know from what everybody is talking about and the rumors about how the trade talks went down was the Cubs were looking for – were asking for Brett Gardner, and Cashman said, you know, said, no, we're not giving Gardner up. And then it turned out to be the deal with basically Adam Waring being the headliner in that trade. So – It's interesting that he came back, but it seems like it was very good timing on Cashman's part because, one, you guys really didn't have a spot for him any longer with Zobrist now coming in. I mean, it happened back-to-back. So is that kind of your feeling, like the timing was just perfect and the stars, no pun intended, kind of aligned for this trade?
Yeah, I think that the Cubs weren't going to make that deal unless they had Zobrist. And right. I think it was both things relied on each other. They were if they couldn't trade Castro, they weren't going to take Zobrist, and if they couldn't take Zobrist, they weren't going to trade Castro. And it worked out well. And who knows? I kind of wonder if Jim Hendry, who didn't have something to do with it, who drafted him and called him up and everything. Obviously, he likes him, but I'm just fine with the trade itself. I think the biggest part of that was the Cubs needed some payroll flexibility. Mm-hmm. And I think we saw the result a couple days later by them signing Jason Hayward. And I think that deal probably wouldn't have happened if they weren't able to free up some of the payroll from Castro too.
Oh, you look at what the Cubs did, especially in the last few days with Zobrist, Hayward, and Warren. It addresses three glaring weaknesses that they had, especially in that NLCS against the Mets, where they struggled to put the bat on the ball, which both Hayward and Zobrist are good at. They struggled to play defense, which Hayward and Zobrist are both good at, and they didn't really have much starting depth, which is what Warren could be.
Right, yeah. And not only Warren, but they also picked up John Lackey, who...
Totally. I forgot about Lackey that they signed him. Yeah.
Right. So granted, he's 37 years old, but he is the Cardinals were a 100-win team, and he was their number one starter in the playoffs. And so I think that tells you he's still got quite a bit left. And as a Cubs fan, this has been an incredible offseason. Not only did we knock the Cardinals out of the playoffs, but we just took their best pitcher and their best position player. and both of those players came to the Cubs for less money than what the Cardinals were offering. So there's a lot of celebrating going on in Illinois right now.
I know Cardinals fans get a reputation for being quote unquote the best fans in baseball, but I saw some stuff they were saying to Hayward on Twitter. I don't think they can claim that anymore.
They say that stuff all the time.
It's kind of bullshit.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, I mean, I think that this is a team. This is not a team now where it's the organizational strength is there. The key pieces are there. And it was just kind of the NLCS against the Mets kind of showed us exactly where the weaknesses were. And you're right. Those are the aspects of the team that they're improving this offseason. And it's a huge difference. I mean, I don't know exactly. Obviously, there's still quite a bit of the offseason left. I don't know if their plan is to have Hayward in center field. He's probably not as good in center field as he is in a corner outfield spot. But he's still good. I mean, he's 26. He's still good enough.
He's only 26. Wow, I thought he was older than that.
Yeah, no, that's why that contract you don't necessarily feel too bad about, because you've got him for pretty much his entire prime.
He's another guy who came up very young with the Braves.
Yeah.
In fact, his MLB debut was on opening day against the Cubs, and he single-handedly destroyed the Cubs.
Oh, I remember he hit a massive 3-run shot.
Yeah, I remember that too.
His first at bat, yeah. It's a contract too that's got a couple of opt-outs. I think it's kind of like front-end loaded. But he's so young and he can play. That's another great thing about this Cubs team, and especially with bringing over Zobrist, is that Joe Maddon likes to have a lot of versatility in his lineup. He likes to be able to have guys bat in a lot of different places. He likes them to be able to play in the field in a lot of different places. We saw that the second half of the season, especially, and in the playoffs, he got really creative with substitutions and everything. And both of those players, I think, really play into that. Obviously, he used Zobrist in that capacity in Tampa. So,
All right, I want to get back to Castro. Got a few things I want to talk to him. Somebody you've watched him pretty. You've probably watched most of the games he's played in his career. I know he's kind of has a reputation for making a few mental errors in the field. Is that correct?
Yes, he does have that reputation.
And Yankee fans are not really particularly. They don't really put up with that. So, how do you think he'll react if the Yankee fans get on him? You know, for making a couple mental errors.
I'll tell you, it really seems like he's the kind of guy that just does not, it just rolls off his back. I've never really seen him like, he's, and that's one thing that a lot of fans have found infuriating about him is that he'll make a mistake and there are no signs that he's really frustrated with himself. And he just kind of still looks like his head is in the clouds. His head, yeah. He always looks like his head is in the clouds.
I could see why that could piss some people off, because fans might think, oh, this guy doesn't care. But in reality,
sounds like Robinson Cano.
But in reality, I mean, it's just it's just that's his personality, I guess.
Right. And I honestly think if that's true and that it doesn't get him down, I think you would want that. Who wants somebody playing tentatively after that or having that in the back of their minds or anything? And another thing about him, too, is that he does make a lot of boneheaded mistakes, but he pretty much makes them on the routine plays. And then you'll think, you know, he's so worthless. He can't field a normal ground ball or he makes a mental mistake. I mean, there are times, and I hope that you guys don't see this, and we haven't seen this in a while, but there were times where his back was to home plate when the ball was being pitched. I mean,
I saw a couple of vines of that people were tweeting around. But do you think that could be more for the fact that he was playing on a last place team?
I think that that's quite possible. I think, and that's another thing that's really impressive about him is, and I guess one thing that makes me sad that he's not going to get to see success with the Cubs or more than he experienced this year is just because, you know, he was there through the worst of it. And he was there when there was nothing else to lean on. It was him and Anthony Rizzo. And if those two guys didn't do anything in the lineup, you had to wait for those two guys next at bats because nothing else was going to happen. And so I kind of feel bad like he suffered through really the worst. I mean, it is the worst stretch in Cubs history. And now he's not going to be there to you know, hopefully when they ultimately win it all or whatever, he's not
multiple
going
World to Series. Is that what you're going to say? Multiple World Series titles.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, in fairness, it's not like he got traded to the Tampa Rays. He did get traded to the Yankees.
Right.
I don't feel too bad for him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of worse places that he could have ended up. And I still think it's, I guess if you had to be traded somewhere, you're going to want to go somewhere where fans are passionate, good, you know, good or bad, they're passionate and they're there for every game. And so I think that's kind of what he was used to at Wrigley. And I think he'll have those same experiences at Yankee Stadium.
So talking a little bit more about his makeup before we get into, because I definitely want to hear more about his hitting style and just things like that. But just talking about his makeup too, we talked about things that don't bother him, or he seems like he can really hold off a lot of the negativity and kind of, you know, brush it off. What about his personality? Is he a guy that fans are going to get behind? That, you know, is he outgoing? Is he good with the media? What's he like with the fans and kind of his personality in that way?
He's not especially outgoing, and he is not somebody that was typically, had the media in front of him in the clubhouse or anything. He didn't really hear too much, and part of it was that for the first two or three years, he didn't speak English very well, and he was still young. I mean, now the last couple of years, you've kind of seen him interviewed more, but you're not going to get a lot out of the things that he says. I mean, he just talks in your usual sports cliches and everything. And so if you're looking for somebody that's like, I guess kind of a personality, I don't think that's Castro.
Okay.
But again, I think that can also be a good thing because, he kind of just blends in, good or bad. So
I actually read an interesting article after the trade went through that one of his biggest mentors when he was on the Cubs was Alfonso Soriano. And obviously Soriano spent a lot of time with the Yankees. He came up with the Yankees as a very young player as a second baseman who didn't speak much English. So it sort of seems like he's gotten a lot of mentorship from Soriano, which if you're a Yankee fan is probably making you feel pretty good because Soriano handled New York pretty well.
Yeah, I honestly think that's probably a pretty good comparison. And in fact, when Castro got called up, he lived with Soriano, I think, for that first season. And I think part of it was to kind of keep him out of trouble, maybe, and help him make some better decisions, since Soriano was the veteran. But I think that's probably a pretty good comparison, because when Soriano was with the Cubs, you didn't really hear too much from him. And he was always kind of just there and doing his job. And that's what Castro is.
As long as you produce on the field, at least I know with Yankee fans, as long as you're producing on the field, they put up with a lot of stuff. If you're good, bad with the meter, or whatever it is. So, I mean, obviously stats are, if you're producing on the field with stats, then fans will get behind them.
Well, and also this, I mean, not to completely just, I think it's actually a relatively interesting point with the music and what Corey was saying about how the stadium kind of got behind him, because the music was a lot of fun and it was like their way of supporting him. I honestly think, one, first of all, I hope that Yankee Stadium does something like this and lets a little bit more fun into the stadium with this walk-up music and plays it a little louder and lets the fans get into it, because I think that could be a lot of fun and it could be kind of a new a cool thing at Yankee Stadium. But it seems like that's actually a pretty significant part of who he is, and just kind of a vibe that he sets is a good tone. And I think that's exactly what the Yankee Stadium needs.
Oh, certainly. I mean, he's Dominican born and he's going into the Bronx. I mean, that's the huge Dominican population in the Bronx, and a huge population of Yankee fans are Dominican. So I actually think it's a really good fit. Go ahead.
And I think part, like what kind of got that whole thing started with his walk-up music is that the team got excited. You know, they were the ones that were like clapping along with it and dancing and everything. And I kind of think that might be what kind of started the fans doing that. But I think, obviously, as a Cubs fan and a fan of Wrigley Field, until this year, you know, we didn't have any jumbotrons. We didn't have walk-up music. It was all organ music and everything. And I think that it really helped fans kind of loosen up, because there were a lot of people that were just not interested in walk-up music. They were really skeptical of the huge video boards and everything like that. And so we talked on our podcast about how Castro's walk-up music and everyone embracing it kind of helped ease people into this, and they could see that it wasn't just going to be, you know, all the updates and everything weren't going to be about selling advertisements and all this kind of stuff, that really it was kind of like making the ballpark a more fun experience for everybody. And how does walk-up music ruin a baseball game?
You know, exactly.
The tradition of a baseball game, it doesn't, you know.
One thing I hate about old time baseball fans is their inability to go with new trends, whether that's with new player style or, you know, the bat flips and all that kind of stuff. Get with the times, people. It's exciting.
Well, especially if you want these younger generations to love the game as much as we do, and as the older generations have. And I think that if you don't make baseball fun, if you make it this old stuffy, you know, old white guy game, then the youth aren't going to be interested in it, and the youth aren't going to embrace it. And I think it has to be fun. Kids have to see baseball as being fun. And I think that could breathe a lot of life into the game.
Yeah. 162 games is a lot of games to watch through and through. So if it's not fun, you're not going to be watching.
Right.
So he moves over to second base. He's came up as a shortstop, played the first 5 years of his career as a shortstop, or whatever it was, four or five years. He moves over to second base, and obviously he handled that well mentally, but how did his defense transition over to second base? And the reason I'm asking this is because the Yankees had a prospect named Rob Refsnyder, who the biggest knock on him was defense, and that's why they were not playing him this year. So how is Castro's defense over at second?
Well, in the short time that we saw him in second base, the last couple months of the season, it was really good. I mean, Castro, although he will make boneheaded mistakes at shortstop, at the same time, he had great range, and there would be plays that you would think, oh, there's no way he's going to get to that. There's no way he'll make that throw. And he does it. He's great at the spectacular plays. But it seemed like, you know, and so if you can cover that much ground and you can play shortstop at that level, then you can definitely play second base at that level. And the big concern that a lot of fans had was him making that change in the middle of the season, making that change on the fly, and really having to learn an entirely new position, which all the angles are different, and then all of the footwork, you know, with turning a double play and everything. And the one thing about Castro is that I think he is very athletically gifted, and he makes everything look pretty easy, and he's just naturally athletic, and he has the instincts to just know where to be, know how to, you know, where to go with the ball and stuff. And I mean, like I said, you will see him make mistakes, but sometimes he'll just shock you. And I think it's partially that he doesn't really have to think a lot about what he's doing. He just, it's, I guess, muscle memory or whatever they call that.
Well, he's an athlete. He's still young, so he's got the athleticism to make the plays, even if maybe it doesn't come as second nature yet in his career.
Right. And I mean, there would be times that same play where the same look that you would see from him when he would make a boneheaded mistake is the same look that you would see when he would just do something incredible and that, you know, you're going to remember forever. It's that same look where it's just kind of like no big deal to him and he doesn't really think about it and he kind of moves on and he's ready for the next play, or unless he has his back turned to the plate.
And that's good news, because, you know, with the guy that we have at shortstop, obviously we had his first full year last year was Didi Gregorius. And, you know, it sounds very similar, because we've seen him make that simple play, look difficult, and he'll boot a ground ball that's right to him. Yet he'll make the spectacular play up the middle or, you know, on the, towards third base side. So it sounds like a very similar type of style. But what that means for us and Yankee fans, you get excited, because it sounds like there's a lot of range up the middle and there's not very many balls that are going to be going to the outfield. So, that's exciting for me, and have these, you know, so young can really just gel together and they have a lot of time to grow together. That's a lot. That means a lot as a second base shortstop combination. So that's exciting to hear.
Yeah. His defense was good at second base and I don't see it, you know, going down anytime soon. I mean, he's still got young, fresh legs, and I think you're going to see great defense from him at second base.
So a few years ago, he was up in the 180, and then one year he even had 207 hits, I'm seeing, in 2011. Last couple years, though, it's come down, and his average has come down a little bit. But I know he's pretty aggressive at the plate. Is that right?
Yeah, he is. He doesn't take a lot of walks, and that's something I think that kind of like flies under the radar, that since he was called up, there's only one middle infielder with more hits than Castro, and that's Cano. He's on pace for 3,000 hits. I mean, he hits the ball a lot. And he's had, I think, two seasons where he batted 300 or higher. And he always talks about how he sees himself as – that's the hitter that he sees himself as, a 300 hitter. And his average has kind of jumped around all over the place, but don't forget that he has responded very well to certain coaching. And this is the one thing that kind of makes me nervous about him going to New York, is I'm not real familiar with the coaching staff that you have there, but if he does not have good coaches working with him, he has some really bad habits that he can fall into. For instance, I mean, if he's struggling at the plate, it seems like his instinct is just to pull the ball. And that's he gets too aggressive and he starts trying to pull the ball. And his best hitting is when he's at least open to going, you know, to the opposite field. And that's what we saw a lot of in the second half, was that he would kind of sit back on things a little bit and drive it the other way. And so that's, I'm really, just as a Castro fan and somebody that wants to see him succeed and do really well there, that's the one thing that kind of makes me nervous.
Well, we saw that with Didi Gregorius actually last year. I mean, that was one of his big issues, is he was trying to pull the ball too much. When he started using the entire field, and this was an adjustment that he made, what, Andrew, 2 months into the season, we really started seeing his batting average tick up. We started seeing his confidence tick up. And now the Yankees have, one of the hitting coaches that's coming up is Marcus Thames, who was in the minor league system. He's a former player, but he's been more of a development role and working with a lot of the younger guys, and has a great reputation, has a good relationship from what we hear with a lot of the younger guys. So they're very well could be a good fit as far as, you know, helping him kind of spray the ball over the field.
And I think it's important to note that the Yankees are not going to ask him to go bat third. They're going to probably put him
seven, eight, or nine,
at least to start the year. So he's going to be buried in the lineup. He's not going to have all the pressure on him, which he'll be able to just concentrate on having good games and good at-bats. The one thing, though, I hate as a baseball fan, and I hate when players, I don't mind if they're aggressive, but if they're not swinging at good pitches, that's when I get pissed off. So does he have a tendency to expand the strike zone, or you know, just because he doesn't take a lot of walks doesn't necessarily mean he swings at everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, he doesn't have great pitch selection. he does definitely expand the strike zone. But one thing to go along with that, though, is that he's one of those guys that just seems like he's able to make contact kind of wherever the ball is. I mean, I hate to compare him to like a Vlad Guerrero, because he was kind of the extreme of that. You could roll the ball to him and he'd make contact.
He was better at a ball that bounced than it was right down the middle.
Yeah.
Pete Rose was the same thing. I mean, you could throw the ball anywhere and he'd hit it. These guys are innate hitters. They see the ball, hit the ball. I like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of the way he is. I mean, he's not taking walks because he likes to swing. But his strikeout rate isn't, you know, really elevated because he is a contact hitter. He makes a lot of contact. And he tends to get the ball in play. So
that's something that we so desperately need. And not only that, but he really helps the Yankees lineup too, just because he bats from the right side. I mean, the fact that last year we had a predominantly left-handed lineup, and when a left-handed starting pitcher came in there, let's just say, I don't know, Dallas Keuchel, who threw 19 scoreless innings against us last year, including in a play-in game or a one-game playoff. You know, we really struggled against those left-handed starters, and not even just the aces, but we made some of the three and four, you know, guys, three or four tier starters look like Sandy Koufax against us. So, you know, that's something that really helped out quite a bit, is that he's a right-handed guy who makes contact and wants to be a 300 hitter, even if he's not all the time. At least he wants to be. That's exciting.
Yeah, you would like to see a player think of themselves as a 300.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. I mean, what did he hit? 350? 350 plus in the second half of the year? I mean, he was on fire.
Yeah, I think the last month, I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, the last month, I think he hit 407 in September. So yeah, he definitely was hitting the ball, and I hope that continues. Obviously, he's not going to be a 400 hitter, but I hope that at least you know, he's able to make the same adjustments or continue those, and to be able to you know, have to put the same swing on the ball and everything as what he was doing, and responding well to coaching. So,
and that's batting 400 at the end of the season in the middle of a playoff race, in the playoff hunt. So these are all big games, especially the way that the NL Central was shaking out and that the way everything was going on. These are all big games, and by him stepping up after the demotion that he had, and then really stepping up with the bat, you know, over at second base in a playoff hunt, is to me very positive. So I'm liking everything you're saying, and I'm very excited about him now.
Yeah, and a lot of Cubs fans that didn't like him wanted to see him traded at the trade deadline. I mean, I think as a whole, I mean, a lot of Cubs fans really kind of changed their opinions on him just because of what we saw him do. I mean, 2015 had to have been a really rough season for him. I mean, it would be tough to see another 20-year-old in Addison Russell come up and take your job that you've had for five or six seasons. And the fact that he stepped up to a challenge and tried to earn his way back and to earn things. I mean, that's a lot better than, like I said, I think he really probably could have divided that clubhouse if he wanted to. I'm not sure how many guys he has in his pocket, but, you know, I mean, just that it could have been a lot uglier. And it was really, I thought it was really cool to see him react the way that he did.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about is how the Cubs fans' reaction have been to the trade. Are they happy with what they got in return for Castro? Are they sad to see him go? Or is it like, in Theo we trust? What's the atmosphere over in Chicago?
I think it's a little bit of all those things. I mean, I think even when it happened, I realized, like, my first thought was, okay, something else is happening here. Like, this isn't really a trade that... obviously, the Cubs have a lot of infield depth right now, and they don't have enough places for everybody. But Castro wasn't. I mean, he had a really team friendly deal, and didn't seem like the Cubs would just kind of throw him away for no reason. And so, as soon as that happened, I thought, okay, something bigger is good. Like, they're putting money toward. I mean, obviously, you had to think, okay, they're putting money towards Hayward. That's what's going on here. And so, I think a lot of people looked at Castro for Warren and were disappointed in that, where I think most people realized, you know, this front office, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, they are much smarter than me. And yeah. I think a lot of Cubs fans have that, like, we're just going to trust those guys because they clearly know what they're doing. They're clearly smarter than we are. But I mean, you know how fans are. You still get the people that are. And what was funny is I think a lot of the people that were like furious about this trade were the same people that were hating on Castro at the trade deadline and desperately and criticizing the front office for not getting rid of him. So,
but as you said, a lot of people grew up. I mean, he grew up as a Cub, so he's right. Sort of a home guy. He's their guy. It's sad to see a guy like that go.
Oh yeah, and I mean, even the people, you know, like myself, I'm in favor of the trade. I think it's a good thing. And it's probably a good thing for both teams. But
it is. I think it's a great trade for both teams.
Yeah, I when it happened, I was actually at. It's kind of funny because on the way there, you know, on the way to my daughter had a holiday. I don't know, whatever you call it, at the school, you know, performance thing.
Yeah.
And so we're driving there and all, you know, that you could kind of tell something was about to happen. And so we were talking about on the way there. And then she performed up on stage and everything. And then I went and got her afterwards. And the first thing she comes up and she said, "Did they trade Castro?" I was like, "Yeah, they did." And she's like, "Oh, man, that sucks." I was like, "Yeah, it does." I mean, even the people that were in favor of the trade, that trust Theo and Jed, that they know what they're doing. I mean, yeah, you still were sad because it was like he was our guy. You know, for better or for worse, he was our guy. And, you know, there was a lot on Twitter, a lot of people posting their favorite videos of him and the stuff that he's done and some of the things that were kind of head scratching and then things that were humorous. And so it was just kind of a night where Cubs fans on social media were just kind of like, I don't know, in a way, it kind of felt like we were just like mourning the loss of a friend or something.
At this point, I don't think Cubs fans have the patience or the time to say, "Okay, that was our guy," and cry over spilt milk. You guys got to win now. You know what I mean? Like, you guys have a team to win now, and I feel like the front office realizes that, and they went for it by adding the complementary pieces, the depth pieces that they needed to really compete. I think, I mean, immediately. So I think it was a terrific move for you guys. Adam Warren is one, a good starting pitcher. He's going to add a lot of, you know, just stability to the back end of your rotation. And if he's used as a starting pitcher, but at the same time, I mean, you know, him out of the bullpen is something that he's had a lot of success doing that. And he's a guy that we trusted for, you know, for a long time being that guy, being the guy that the old reliable to go in there and, you know, close out an inning, or if he's starting, he's going to get six quality innings. So he's a really good teammate, and he's going to definitely make your team better.
All right, good stuff, Corey. We appreciate you coming on, giving us some insight into Castro. And, you know, Scott, any last words before we wrap this up?
No, I just appreciate it. And, you know, having you guys on and just talking about the Cubs, I'm kind of rooting for you guys in the National League. I said that last time, but it'd be fun to have a New York-Chicago World Series. And maybe we get Castro back in Wrigley for a World Series. That'd be fun.
I'll tell you, I think they'll play his walk-up music. If we play in the World Series, I think that they'll play his walk-up music for him, and it will be a lot of fun. And I think for any Yankees fans listening that aren't sure about Castro or whatever, I mean, there's some great gifts out there to watch, to really kind of like see why a lot of Cubs fans have mixed emotions about this, that it's better for the team, but that we'll miss them. I mean, there was, I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was the play this year. It was in May, where there was the ground ball hit to Chris Bryant, who was playing third and kind of crossed in front of Rizzo, or in front of Castro, and Castro mirrored him, like acted like he was fielding the ground ball and did the same footwork and like faked a throw to first base. It's pretty hysterical. And it's the little things like when he's in the on deck circle or when he's in the batter's box, and if the catcher goes out to talk to the pitcher, he'll do things like spit sunflower seeds in the air and try to hit him with his bat. I mean, it's that, like, those things that make him seem like a kid.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's not taking it too seriously, and that's what you have to do. It is a kid's game at the end of the day. Granted, they're being paid a lot of money to do it, but it's a kid's game meant to be fun. And if you're not having fun, you're not going to be performing as well. So I love that.
Yeah, I think you guys are going to enjoy him. And take care of him for us, okay?
We will. All right, so you can catch Corey at IVNV. Definitely check out his Twitter and podcast and website. So, Corey, again, thank you, and we'll talk to you guys next time.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.